Today we are going to talk about what is called Sila. Sila is our behavior, how we behave. Now today there is a subject called psychology, and this subject called psychology has been defined by the psychologists as the study of human behavior. So human behavior is something that is very important to study. Why people behave in certain ways. There have been psychologists of different kinds who have been expressing their views about human behavior. Now when we speak of behavior, it is important to know what is called the motive. That means when a human being behaves in a certain way, there is a reason why that person behaves in that way. The reason why is what is called motive. Something makes the person behave in a certain way. If you study what is called physics, or even what you call mechanics, you begin to study about Isaac Newton. Now Isaac Newton was a scientist in the 16th and 17th centuries. That was the time when people in the West began to understand a very important natural law, and this natural law was called determinism. Determinism is an important natural law which is the basis of all modern scientific thinking, scientific inventions, scientific discoveries. All that is based on this very important natural law, which is called determinism. And when these human beings began to understand this natural law. Something happened to the human being. Now in the Western history of the Western society, that period has been called the Age of Enlightenment. It's called the Age of Enlightenment because people were enlightened. Why? Up to this period, people in the West, they were not really thinking properly. They were mainly believing in traditional dogmas. Dogmas are things that are believed blindly, without thinking. So these traditional dogmas have been believed. And this was the time, this age of enlightenment was the time when science began. And when science began, they came to know this law called determinism. And what this law says is that everything that happens in the world happens due to the presence of the necessary conditions. Whatever happens in the world happens only when the necessary conditions are present. Not just one condition, several conditions must be present for something to happen. In ancient times, people thought that this world was governed by supernatural spirits. When it rains, they thought some spirit that they call God is throwing water down from the sky or heaven. When there was thunder and lightning, they thought God was angry. That is why they are making such noises. Sometimes this lightning comes and may set fire to a home, or maybe a forest fire starts. When that happens, they are frightened that God is very angry for some reason. And when there is an earthquake, again people thought this is because God was angry over something. So like that, everything that happened in the world happened due to these supernatural gods or devils doing things. That's what they thought. But with the coming of science, when people began to discover things, they began to realize that everything that happens in the world happens not due to these supernatural spirits or gods, It happens when the necessary conditions are present. So when they realize that this was happening due to the necessary conditions when present, they now know why rain comes down. They began to learn that rain is coming from the clouds, and the clouds contain water in the form of water vapor. And when this water vapor begins to cool, it comes down. So becoming cool is one of the conditions. And water being present in the clouds is another condition. So like that, several conditions are necessary for this rain to come down. And how did the water go to the clouds? They began to realize that is also because the water evaporates. Even the water in the ocean comes up when it evaporates, because it becomes water vapor. And this water vapor comes down, and that is how there is water in the rivers. Where did the water come into the river? Again, it's coming down from these clouds. And when it rains, the rivers get collected. So you see, the reason why things happen came to be known. So some people even created a verse. There was an English verse that said, God said, let there be Newton, and Newton came and told the world that everything happens due to the presence of the necessary conditions. You see, so Newton became like the Buddha in those days to the people in the West. But long before the Westerners came to know about this law of determinism, people in India came to know about this, because it was the Buddha who brought this message to the world, and the Buddha called this Paticca Samuppada, today translated as dependent origination. That thing called dependent origination is the same thing as determinism. So when people in the West began to hear about this and understand this, they lost faith in the religious dogmas. When they lost faith in the religious dogmas, there were even revolutions that took place. It's not only what is called the scientific revolution, or even other kinds of revolution took place in England, in France, in even Russia, the Marxist revolution took place. And in this revolution there was killing. Some people started killing the priests in the churches. They started killing even kings and queens. But this revolution during the time of the Buddha, more than 2,000 years before the Westerners came to know about this, the Buddha brought this to the world, and there was a revolution there also, but not a social revolution here. It was an internal revolution, a revolution in the mind. And that internal revolution transformed people. The people were transformed. Transform means not that the body became different, but the mind became different. And the behavior changed, how people behaved. And that transformation of the human being is what is called becoming an arahant, or becoming a Buddha, is a transformation. What is that transformation? We have to understand that when we talk about this transformation, we have to understand what we call the mind. Normally people think there are two things called a mind and a body. But there are no two things. Even modern psychologists are aware that mind and body are not two different things. The mind is the body, and the body is the mind. Now, when you think about a motor car, you might buy a new car and bring it home. You keep it somewhere inside the garage or even outside. If you leave it there, even for 100 years, it won't move. You can't go anywhere. If you want the car to move, there must be some very important thing to do. And that important thing is that you have to start the engine. If you don't start the engine, the car won't move. And after starting the engine, maybe you have to drive also. But the important thing is that the engine alone, being there, is not going to hurt. It has to start working. So in the same way, we might have a body, and the working of this body is the mind. So a mind is not a separate thing, just as the working of the engine is not a separate thing. It is the engine that is doing the working. The Buddha used three words when referring to the mind. Three words. Now some people today think that those three words are what are called synonyms. What are synonyms? They are three different words referring to the same thing. But that is not what it is. Because there is no such thing as mind. What we call the mind is an activity. And there are three activities that we refer to as mind. These are three different activities of the body that we call the mind. The first activity is what is called perception. Now we have what are called five senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the body itself. The whole body becomes a sense organ, the sense of touch. So with the whole body we can touch and feel the touch. But with the eyes we can see. You can't see with the body. You need the eyes. And to hear sounds, we need the ears. If the ears are not working, we can't hear sounds. And with the nose, we can smell. With the tongue, we can taste. But this, what is seen with the eye, the ear can't do. Ear can only hear sounds, just as the eye cannot hear sounds. So each sense organ is doing a different thing. So if each sense organ is doing a different thing, you cannot become aware of the world by using one sense. This is why a blind person will not be able to see the world. Or even a deaf person will not be able to know much about the world. When one sense organ is not working properly, then you can't become aware of the world properly. But That sensory activity is what is called perception. But perception is of one sense organ is different from the perception of another sense organ. And this is why messages are going from the different sense organs to the brain. And the brain corrects all the messages and forms a concept. Because the brain can begin to think. So by thinking, you can put what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you touch, you put them together and you begin to interpret and form a concept about the world. This is the nature of the world. Whenever we see a chair, we think we are only seeing the chair. We are not just seeing the chair. When we say chair, we are not only talking about what I see with the eyes. I also know if I touch how the chair will feel. And I know what the sound is, or the smell, or the taste if I put my tongue there. So all that is included when we see a chair. All the impressions that you get through the senses is included in this word chair. So that is how we become aware of the world. And the world that we become aware of is a concept in our mind. So the whole world that we are talking about is really inside our mind. It's like a camera. The camera can take pictures, and the picture is not something outside there, but inside the camera. So in the same way, when I look and see something, what I see is not something there, but inside. It's a picture. So it's not only the picture. Now, into the picture I add the sound. So even the sound is not something outside there, it is inside. If I get a smell, that is also inside. If I get a taste, that is also inside. If I feel the touch, that is also inside, not outside. Although we think the world is outside there, but the whole world is just inside. It is an idea in the mind. This is why a certain deva, once deva, you know what a deva is? These are devas from the deva loka or heavens, came to the Buddha to ask a question. This deva came to the Buddha and asked, if you can travel in space, travel in the sky, in space, at a very high speed, do you think we can reach the end of the world? That's what he asked. Then the Buddha said, no, you cannot reach the end of the world by traveling in space. Then this Deva said, you know, this is a great truth that you are telling me, because I have found that. Once before I was born as a Deva, I was a human being. And I was one of these yogis in India, meditating. And I gained certain psychic powers. And I had the ability to travel in space at a very high speed. A very high speed. It's like the speed of light. Now today, the scientists say that the high speed is the speed of light. So with that speed, he could travel in space. And he said, I traveled for 100 years. And died. And when I died, I was born as a Deva. And I know, as you said, by traveling in space, we cannot come to the end of the world. Then the Buddha said, but without coming to the end of the world, you cannot bring all suffering to an end. Without reaching the end of the world, you cannot bring suffering to an end. And then he said, the world, the beginning of the world, the end of the world, and the way leading to the end of the world is in this fathom-long body itself. With its perception and conception. So that is what he said. That this whole world, although we think is outside there, it is all inside here. That is what he pointed out. So by traveling in space, you can never reach the end of the world. If you want to reach the end of the world, you have to make a transformation of your mind. It is this transformation of the mind that makes you reach the end of the world. That's the important thing to understand. And that transformation of the mind is what the Buddha achieved. And not only that the Buddha achieved it, he told others how to achieve it themselves. Each person has to do it himself. One cannot do it for another. You have to do it yourself. So the Buddha cannot do it for other people. Each person has to do it by himself or herself. That's the important thing to understand. And this transformation became possible only because the Buddha understood this thing called determinism. That's the important thing to understand. Today the modern scientists are using this knowledge about determinism to transform the world. But they have been able to do something like to turn a fan using electricity or create a light by just pressing a button and the light comes. Or if you want to go somewhere, you can get into a motor vehicle and go. These are also wonderful things that the scientist has done. But all those things have been done, which is by changing what is going on outside. And by doing that, do you think the sufferings of the world has come to an end? The world is still filled with crime, it's filled with wars, killing, murder. All the troubles are still going on with all the scientific inventions and discoveries. Still the troubles in the world have not stopped. But this same law of determinism the Buddha used in a different way. He didn't try to transform the world. Although he had certain powers, once Mara, a powerful person called Mara, he came to the Buddha and said, "You know, I know that you have a power where if you tell Mount Everest, you know the highest mountain in the world, this is Mount Everest. If you tell this Mount Everest, it's just a matter of thinking only. You don't even have to come out with a sound with your mouth. You can only think. May this mountain become a mountain of gold. It will just become a mountain of gold. You have that power. I know that. Please, for the benefit of the world, think that thought and make the mountain, the Himalaya mountain, a mountain of gold." So the Buddha said, "Yes, Mara, I have that power. But if I make that mountain a mountain of gold, what do you think will happen? How many people will be killed? People will start fighting and quarreling to get that gold. So many people, there'll be so many wars, and so many people trying to get that gold. If you have studied history, you will know that in the United States, there was a thing called the gold rush, where people went to get gold, and they fought and killed so many people to get gold. So if they killed in the United States to get gold, how many people will be killed if the Himalaya mountain became a mountain of gold? So this is why the Buddha didn't try to teach people science. Instead of that, he used the same law of determinism to change the mind, of the person. And it is by changing the mind that he was able to change the behavior. You may have heard that there was a man during the time of the Buddha in India. Who began to kill people. He killed almost 100 people. And each person that he killed, he took the finger and made a necklace of fingers. His name was, you know the name, Angulimala. The Buddha went into the forest to meet him. And there were people who said, don't go. You will be killed by that man. He didn't listen to that. He went. And when that man saw the Buddha, he started chasing after the Buddha. He ran after the Buddha. The Buddha was going very slowly. But he couldn't catch him. So he got close and asked the Buddha, stop. Why are you moving? The Buddha said, I have stopped. You are the one who is running. So, of course, it was this man, Angulimala, who really stopped and asked him to stop going. So he thought, why is this person saying this? And he began to think. He was an intelligent man. And so when the Buddha said, I have stopped, you are the one who is running. So he began to think. And then the Buddha said, I have stopped killing people, but you have not stopped. Then only that he realized that he has been killing people and that is not a good thing. And he was ultimately transformed. And he became an arahant. So you see, that kind of transformation of the human being, the Buddha was able to do. Why? Because he understood how the mind works. It is by understanding how the mind works that he was able to change the mind. Now, in the modern times, there was a psychologist by the name of Sigmund Freud, a German man. And he is the person who made use of the same law called determinism to deal with the mind. And he created a new word. He called it psychic determinism. Psychic determinism means the determinism of the mind. What he pointed out was that even the human mind is working according to that same law of determinism. What does that mean? Now, according to the Christian doctrine or the teachings of the Christians, they say God gave human beings what is called a free will. Free will means the freedom to act as you want. He said the human being was given the freedom to act as you want. That is called the free will. And then God gave commandments, laws. You should not do certain things. Now, what is the meaning of that? If you are given the freedom to act as you want, then there cannot be laws. But here God gave him laws also. Don't do this, don't do that. And at the same time given free will to do as you want. So what the human beings did was, if they got free will, then they acted as they wanted. And now God became angry and punished them and send them to hell. So whatever that is, they believe in this thing called free will. But Sigmund Freud, by studying the human mind, said human beings have no free will. You can't act as you want. That is the problem. Why? Why can't you act as you want? Because we have two parts of the mind. One is the thinking part and the other is the emotional part. Now you have at the beginning, before we started this talk, you took the five precepts. You recited the five precepts. How many of you really observe the five precepts? If you ask your own mind, whether you are really practicing the five precepts, you will discover that you are not practicing the five precepts. Why? When you get angry, you will be doing all kinds of mischievous things. You might be fighting, quarreling, and you may be doing things maybe against your mother or against your father or maybe against your children or maybe your husband or your wife. Now all these things are happening. Why? Because of anger. When anger comes, you forget the five precepts. Or if you become maybe sexually excited, again you may be breaking all the rules. Why? Because when the emotion and the thinking, reasoning comes in conflict, emotion always wins. This is the point. So that means you have no free will. You are not free to act as you want. You may be wanting to practice the five precepts, but you can't do it. This is the problem. That means there is no real free will. Everything that you do is dependent on the necessary conditions. You have to understand the necessary conditions that makes you act in a certain way. And that happens without your knowledge. Something happening without your knowledge means it is happening unconsciously. When anger comes, it is happening unconsciously. You are not doing it. When a desire comes, it is happening unconsciously. When a fear comes, it is happening unconsciously. When you become worried over something, it happens unconsciously. That is why you can't control it. You can control it only if you become conscious of that. So that is why the Buddha pointed out that if you want to act as you want, you have to become conscious of these unconscious happenings. And by controlling the conditions necessary for that to happen, that is the meaning of satipatthana, today translated as mindfulness. That is what we call meditation, learning to gain control over your mind, which means the thinking part gains control over the emotional part. And that means you have to learn to meditate. And most people think meditation is concentrating your mind on the breath or some sort of thing. That is not meditation. That is like tying a dog to a post. If you tie a dog to a post, if the dog is running about and you want the dog to be remaining without running about, then you tie the dog to a post. Does the dog become a good dog by doing that? The moment you release the dog will start jumping about again. So tying the dog to a post doesn't correct the dog. You will have to train the dog in a certain way. So in the same way, you cannot gain control over your mind by learning to concentrate. Concentration is not the method. There is a special technique of doing that, and that is by beginning to become aware of the conditions necessary for something to happen in your mind. That is why we should learn to meditate. Meditation is a very important thing. Now, almost all people learn to wash their clothes, or maybe they learn to clean the body by maybe taking a bath or something. But how many people clean their mind? How many people take a bath for the mind? No one does that. But what the Buddha points out is, even more than taking a bath to clean your body, you need to take a bath to clean your mind. And that is the meaning of meditation. You have to learn to gain control over your emotions. That is the only way you can be happy. Happiness comes by learning to gain control over the mind. Without gaining control over the mind, you cannot change your behavior. So this is the most important thing to learn. To change your behavior, you will have to change the mind. So I think that is enough for the day.
One thing that you were mentioning, to change a behavior, we must control our emotion, or rather control our mind for emotion, and only we can do good behavior. If that is principle is correct, today we are living in a world of commercialization where a lot of advertisement has hit on our emotion so that to create us for pleasure, so that we buy more, act more, or even to motivate us for worthy ones like status, because done free, right? And to behave toward that direction, which is very worthy. And using technology, mass communication, so many people are being emotionally stimulated. And hardly many people wash their mind or do meditation. How can it possible bring harmonious and peace to the public if majority of the public are ignorant of meditation? Can Banting suggest something that could help to put this right? Thank you.
Well, it's a good question. Only problem is, once a person came and asked the Buddha that same question. He said, there is this method that you are talking about is good, but how many people will be able to practice this, and can the world be changed with this? So the Buddha became silent. He didn't have anything to say. Then his disciple, Ananda, he began to speak. And he said, You see, if there is a city, those days, in the city also, they made a boundary around the city, so that people who might harm the city cannot come in. So in a similar way, if you have a city and you don't want the wrong kind of people to get in, and there are guards around the city, and also a kind of wall is built around the city, how can anyone enter? So the only thing that they can do is to close every place, and if there is just one hole someplace where someone can enter, it is through that hole that the person can come in. And the guard should be guarding that place. So in a similar way, what the Buddha is mainly talking about, how the mind can be spoiled and how the mind can be purified. But how many people really understand this and practice this, that is left to them. And even during the time of the Buddha, only few people who benefited from his teaching. The great majority didn't benefit. Even during the time of the Buddha, there were wars going on. There was that king who used to come to the Buddha and even listen to his sermon. But he didn't stop fighting. He still fought. So one day that same king came to the Buddha and asked, how can I get my people to practice the Dhamma? The Buddha said, there is only one way. You have to start practicing first. If you begin to practice properly, then your ministers will begin to practice. If your ministers begin to practice, maybe the other people who are following the ministers will begin to practice. And if those people begin to practice, then the other people will begin to practice. So that is how it can be propagated. So at least the people who are now listening, that means you, if you begin to practice properly, then all your friends and all the people who come to meet you, they might think, oh, this person has changed now. So we will also begin to practice, and they will also begin to practice. So that is how it can be done. Otherwise, there is no other way. Because all the advertisements today on TV and even in the papers and even the magazines, they are advertising to make your wishes keep on increasing. And they are all having an emotional appeal. So the emotions are excited. The more emotions are excited, the more money they get. So that is what business is all about. To earn money, you will have to get other people to act. And the only way to get other people to act is to appeal to emotions. And that is what they are doing. So if you can learn that You should not get excited when people are giving you to talk to you about various things or show you various things. Yesterday, I went shopping with one of our directors. I wanted to get something. He took me to some kind of mall, and that place was filled with people. We can't even move. So I asked him, why is this so many people here? He said, these people come not just to buy things, they enjoy being inside this. I don't know why. They spend the whole day inside here, especially on Saturdays and Sundays, and then they begin to eat also here, and then they go home at night. So you see, this is the way with modern commercial enterprise or methods of selling things and things, appealing to emotions. And so this is the way things are happening in the modern world. So if you want to really practice the Dhamma, then you will have to close your eyes and close your ears, and that is how you can gain control over your mind. It's very important to understand that.